Chapter 39. They sailed the Alhambra north of Punta San Felipe and heaved to when her paddle wheels churned up a wake of red silt. A few kilometers ahead, the mouth of the Colorado River, wide and shallow, gaped on the horizon. Spread on either side of the murky, salt-laden water were barren mudflats, totally devoid of vegetation. Few planets in the universe could have looked as wretched and dead. Pitt gazed at the grim landscape through the windscreen of the helicopter as he adjusted his safety harness. Shannon was strapped in the co-pilot seat, and Giordino and Roger sat in the rear passenger section of the cabin. He waved at Gunn, who replied with a V for victory sign, and Lauren, who appropriately blew him a kiss. His hands danced over the cyclic and collective pitch sticks as the rotors turned, gathering speed until the whole fuselage shuddered. And then the Alhambra was falling away, and he slipped the helicopter sideways across the water like a leaf blown by the wind. Once safely free of the ferry, he gently slipped the cyclic forward, and the aircraft began a diagonal climb on a northerly course. At 500 meters, 1,640 feet, Pitt adjusted the controls and straightened out in level flight. He flew above the drab waters of the upper gulf for 10 minutes before crossing into the marshlands of the Laguna Salada. A vast section of the flats was flooded from recent rains, and the dead limbs of mesquite rose above the heavily salted water like skeletal arms reaching for salvation. The giant slough was soon left behind as Pitt banked the helicopter across the sand dunes that marched from the mountains to the edge of the Laguna Salada. Now the landscape took on the characteristics of a faded brown moon, more substance than color. The uneven, rocky terrain looked fearsome. Beautiful to the eye, but deadly to the body that struggled to survive its horror during the blazing heat of summer. "There's a blacktop road," announced Shannon, motioning downward. "Highway 5," said Pitt. "It runs from San Felipe to Mexicali." "Is this part of the Colorado Desert?" asked Rogers. "The desert north of the border is called that because of the Colorado River. In fact, this is all part of the Sonoran Desert." "Not very hospitable country. I wouldn't want to walk through it." "Those who are intolerant of the desert die in it," said Pitt thoughtfully. "Those who respect it find it a compelling place to live." "People actually live down there?" Shannon asked in surprise. "Mostly Indians," replied Pitt. "The Sonoran Desert is perhaps the most beautiful of all the world's deserts, even though the citizens of central Mexico think of it as their Ozarks." Giordino leaned out a side window for a better view and peered into the distance through the trusty binoculars. He patted Pitt on the shoulder. "Your hot spot is coming up off to port." Pitt nodded, made a slight course change, and peered at a solitary mountain rising from the desert floor directly ahead. Cerro El Capirote was aptly named. Though not exactly conical in shape, there was a slight resemblance to a dunce cap with the tip flattened. "I think I can make out an animal-like sculpture on the summit," observed Giordino. "I'll descend and hover over it," Pitt acknowledged. He cut his airspeed, dropped, and swung around the top of the mountain. He approached and circled cautiously, on the watch for sudden downdrafts. Then he hovered the helicopter almost nose-to-nose with the grotesque stone effigy. Mouth agape, it seemed to stare back with the truculent expression of a hungry junkyard dog. "Step right up, folks," hawked Pitt as if he were a carnival barker, "and view the astounding demon of the underworld who shuffles cards with his nose and deals them with his toes."
"It exists," cried Shannon, flushed with excitement, as they all were. "It truly exists."
"Looks like a time-worn gargoyle," said Giordino, successfully controlling his emotions.
"You've got to land," demanded Rogers. "We must get a closer look."
"Too many high rocks around the sculpture," said Pitt. "I have to find a flat spot to set down."
"There's a small clearing free of boulders about 40 meters beyond the demon," Giordino said, pointing through the windscreen over Pitt's shoulder.
Pitt nodded and banked around the towering rock carving so he could make his approach into the wind blowing across the mountain from the west. He reduced speed, eased back the cyclic stick. The turquoise helicopter hovered a moment, flared out, and then settled onto the only open space on the stone summit of Cerro El Caparote. Giordino was first out, carrying tie-down lines that he attached to the helicopter and wrapped around rock outcroppings. When he completed the operation, he moved in front of the cockpit and drew his hand across his throat. Pitt shut off the engine, and the rotor blades wound down. Rogers jumped down and offered a hand to Shannon. She hit the ground and took off at a run over the uneven terrain toward the stone effigy. Pitt stepped from the helicopter last, but did not follow the others. He casually raised the binoculars and scanned the sky in the direction of the faint sound of an aircraft engine. The seaplane was only a silver speck against a dome of blue. The pilot had maintained an altitude of 2,000 meters, 6,500 feet, in an attempt to remain unseen. But Pitt was not fooled. His intuition told him he was being tailed the instant he lifted off from the Alhambra. Spotting the enemy only confirmed his suspicions. Before he joined the others already gathered around the stone beast, he took a moment and stepped to the edge of the craggy wall and stared down, thankful that he did not have to make the ascent. The unobstructed panorama of the desert was breathtaking. The October sun tinted the rocks and sand in vivid colors that turned drab during the hot summer. The waters of the Gulf sparkled to the south, and the mountain ranges on both sides of the marshlands of the Laguna Salada rose majestically through a slight haze. Satisfaction swelled within him. He had made a good call. The ancients had indeed selected an imposing spot to hide their treasure. When he finally approached the huge stone beast, Shannon was making detailed measurements of the jaguar body, while Rogers busied himself shooting roll after roll of photos. Giordino appeared intent on searching around the pedestal for a trace of the entrance to the passageway leading down into the mountain.
"Does he have the proper pedigree?" Pitt asked.
"Definitely Chachapoyan influence," Shannon said, her face flushed with fervor. "An extraordinary example of their art."
She stood back as if admiring a painting hanging in a gallery.
"See how the motifs on the scales are exactingly duplicated. They're a perfect match for those on the sculpted beasts in the Pueblo de los Muertos."
"The technique is the same?"
"Almost identical."
"Then perhaps the same sculptor had a hand in carving this one."
"It's possible."
Shannon raised her hand as high as she could reach and stroked the lower part of the serpent's scaled neck. It wasn't uncommon for the Incas to recruit Chachapoyan stone carvers.
"The ancients must have had a strange sense of humor to create a god whose looks could sour milk."
"The legend is vague, but it contends that a condor laid an egg that was eaten and vomited by a jaguar. A snake was hatched from the regurgitated egg and slithered into the sea where it grew fish scales. The rest of the mythological account says that because the beast was so ugly and shunned by the other gods who thrived in the sun, it lived underground, where it eventually became the guardian of the dead."
"The original Ugly Duckling fairy tale."
"He's hideous," Shannon said solemnly, "and yet I can't help feeling a deep sadness for him. I don't know if I can explain it properly, but the stone seems to have a life of its own."
"I understand.
I sense something more than cold stone, too."
Pitt stared down at one of the wings that had dropped off the body and shattered into several pieces. "Poor old guy. He looks like he's fallen on hard times." Shannon nodded sadly at the graffiti and the gouges from bullet holes. "The pity is that local archaeologists never recognize the beast for what it is. A remarkable piece of artwork by two cultures that thrived thousands of kilometers from here." Pitt interrupted her by abruptly raising a hand for silence. "You hear something, a strange sound like someone crying?" She cocked an ear and listened, then shook her head. "I only hear the shutter and automatic winding mechanism on Miles's camera." The eerie sound Pitt thought he heard was gone. He grinned. "Probably the wind. Or those the Demonio del Muertos is guarding. I thought he guaranteed they rest in eternal peace." Shannon smiled. "We know very little about Inca and Chachapoyan religious rites. Our stone friend here may not have been as benevolent as we assume." Pitt left Shannon and Miles to their work and walked over to Giordino, who was tapping the rock around the beast's pedestal with a miner's pick. "See any hint of a passage?" Pitt asked. "Not unless the ancients discovered a method for fusing rock," answered Giordino. "This big gargoyle is carved from an immense slab of solid granite that forms the core of the mountain. I can't find a telltale crack anywhere around the statue's base. If there's a passage, it has to be somewhere else on the mountain." Pitt tilted his head, listening. "There it is again." "You mean that banshee wail?" "You heard it?" Pitt asked in surprise. "I figured it was just wind whistling through the rocks." "There isn't a whisper of wind." A curious look crossed Giordino's face as he wetted one index finger with his tongue and tested the air. "You're right, nary a stir." "It's not a steady sound," said Pitt. "I only notice it at intervals." "I picked up on that, too. It comes like a puff of breath for about 10 seconds and then fades for nearly a minute." Pitt nodded happily. "Could it be we're describing a vent to a cavern?" "Let's see if we can find it," Giordino suggested eagerly. "Better it come to us." Pitt found a rock that seemed molded to his buttocks and settled in. He leisurely wiped a smudge from one lens of his sunglasses, dabbed his brow with a bandana that hung from his pocket, then cupped his ears and began turning his head like a radar antenna. Like clockwork, the strange wail came and went. Pitt waited until he heard three sequences. Then he motioned for Giordino to move along the north side of the peak. No reply was necessary. No words passed between them. They had been close friends since they were children, and had maintained close contact during their years together in the Air Force. When Pitt joined Numa at Admiral Sandecker's request 12 years ago, Giordino went with him. Over time, they learned to respond to each other without needless talk. Giordino moved down a steep slope for about 20 meters, 65 feet, before stopping. He paused and listened while awaiting Pitt's next gesture. The dismal wail came stronger to him than it did to Pitt, but he knew that the sound reverberated off the boulders and was distorted. He didn't hesitate when Pitt motioned him away from where it sounded loudest and pointed to a spot where the side of the peak suddenly dropped off in a narrow chute 10 meters, 33 feet, deep. While Giordino was lying on his stomach surveying a way down to the bottom of the chute, Pitt came over, crouched beside him, and held out a hand, palm down. The wail came again, and Pitt nodded, his lips parting in a tight smile. "I can feel a draft. Something deep inside the mountain is causing air to be expelled from a vent." "I'll get the rope and flashlight from the chopper," said Giordino, rising to his feet and trotting toward the aircraft. In 2 minutes he was back with Shannon and Miles. Her eyes fairly sparkled with anticipation. Al says you found a way inside the mountain.
Pitt nodded. We'll know shortly.
Giordino tied one end of a nylon line around a large rock.
Who gets the honor?
I'll toss you for it, said Pitt.
Heads.
Pitt flipped a quarter and watched as it clinked and spun to a stop on a small, flat surface between two massive boulders.
Tails, you lose.
Giordino shrugged without complaint, knotted a loop and passed it over and then under Pitt's shoulders. Never mind bedazzling me with mountain climbing tricks. I'll let you down and I'll pull you up. Pitt accepted the fact his friend's strength was greater than his own. Giordino's body may have been short, but his shoulders were as broad as any man's, and his muscled arms were a match for a professional wrestler. Anyone who tried to throw Giordino, including karate black belt experts, felt as if they were caught up in the gears of an unyielding piece of machinery.
Mind you don't get rope burn, Pitt cautioned him.
Mind you don't break a leg or I'll leave you for the gargoyle, said Giordino, handing Pitt the flashlight. Then he slowly paid out the line, lowering Pitt between the walls of the narrow chute. When Pitt's feet touched the bottom, he looked up.
Okay, I'm down.
What do you see?
A small cleft in the rock wall just large enough to crawl through. I'm going in.
Don't remove the rope. There could be a sharp drop just inside the entrance.
Pitt lay on his stomach and wormed through the narrow fissure. It was a tight squeeze for 3 meters, 10 feet, before the entryway widened enough so he could stand. He switched on the flashlight and swung its beam along the walls. The light showed he was at the head of a passageway that appeared to lead down into the bowels of the mountain. The floor was smooth with steps hewn into the rock every few paces. A rush of dank air rushed past him like the steamy breath of a giant. He moved his fingertips over the rock walls. They came away wet with moisture. Driven by curiosity, Pitt moved along the passageway until the nylon became taut and he was stopped from venturing further. He aimed the light ahead into the darkness. The cold hand of fear gripped him around the neck as a pair of eyes flashed back at him. There, upon a pedestal of black rock, seemingly sculpted by the same hand as the demon on the mountain peak above, glaring toward the entrance to the passage, was another, smaller, Demonio del Muertos. This one was inlaid with turquoise stone and had white, polished quartz for teeth and red gemstones for eyes. Pitt thought seriously of casting off the rope and exploring further. But he felt it wouldn't be fair to the others. They should all be in on the discovery of the treasure chamber together. Reluctantly, he returned to the crack in the wall and squirmed back into daylight. When Giordino helped him over the edge of the chute, Shannon and Rogers were waiting in hushed expectation.
"What did you see?" Shannon blurted, unable to contain her excitement. "Tell us what you found."
Pitt stared at her without expression for a moment, then broke into an elated grin. "The entrance to the treasure is guarded by another demon, but otherwise the way looks clear." Everyone shouted in elation. Shannon and Rogers hugged and kissed. Giordino slapped Pitt on the back so hard it jarred his molars. Intense curiosity seized them as they peered over the edge of the chute at the small opening leading inside the mountain. None saw a black tunnel leading downward. They gazed through the rock as if it were transparent and saw the golden treasure far below. At least, that's what they thought they saw, but not Pitt. His eyes were sweeping the sky. Foresighted, intuitive, maybe just superstitious. He had a sudden vision of the seaplane that had followed them to the demon, attacking the Alhambra. For a moment, he could see it as clearly as if he were watching television. It was not a pretty sight. Shannon noticed that Pitt was quiet, his face contemplative.
What's wrong? You look like you've just lost your best girl.
I may have, Pitt said darkly. I very well may have.